Good evening, boys and girls, and welcome to the latest edition of the Trinity Tims. I am, as usual, joined by my colleagues, Joe McHugh of Video Celts and James Forrest of the Celtic blog. And I am, of course, Eric Knott from Read Celtic. It's been a hectic week since we last, I was missing last week, so I was away on holidays. So I saw that Baz stepped in ably for me while I was gone, and there was some great debate between you guys again in my absence. So I'm back anyway, and as I said, it's been a hectic few days since last week's pod, and there has been a hell of a lot going on since then as well, inclusive of the box office media conference with Brendan Rodgers on Friday evening, which he absolutely kicked out of the ballpark and did an amazing job and batted away all the questions he was answered with aplomb. We've got plenty to talk about this evening. Jam-packed agenda as usual. We're going to start obviously with yesterday's proceedings at Rugby Park, and obviously there was the protest to begin with. A lot of people decided not to go ahead with the protest. There were still quite a few in the stand at the away end, but I think regardless of that, despite what the media is saying, it actually went off pretty well. I think the fans got their message across very much with the banners that they had on display at the game. And I think the game itself, pretty tough, but we always expect that when we're at Rugby Park. Did we ever in a million years imagine that John Beaton would be the man to award us a stoppage time penalty at Rugby Park? Not a hope, but on the balance of things, it looked like it was a legitimate penalty, and I suppose there was nothing he could really do other than award the penalty. So I will go to Joe first to get his thoughts on first the protest, and then obviously you can give me your feelings on the game. And Kelechi Iheanacho, you sure as hell showed a lot of courage yesterday anyway, I'll give him that, to step up and take such an important penalty. So there's no doubting that he has courage, and there's no doubting he's a brave guy. So let's hear your thoughts on it, Joe, and how you felt about everything that happened at Rugby Park yesterday.
First up on Beaton. Beaton didn't give the penalty. He was very close. He was perfectly placed for it. He'd already ignored two earlier penalty claims, one in each half. It's very dubious, this rule about extending the silhouette and all sorts of things, but Beaton did not want to give the penalty. He was happy to give Celtic the corner. So thanks to Matthew McDermott, he might need to be careful. He was on VAR duty and he picked up. But overall, on the protest, I think it went very, very well. It's good. It's a nice dilemma for legacy media. It is a big, big issue. It's one they can't avoid, but they've also got they get their instructions from Celtic, so they have to belittle this and play it down at every opportunity. I didn't read it, but I think there's something in the Herald this morning about it being a damp squib. They should know all about damp squibs at the Herald.
I saw that too.
Have a look at their circulation. They're experts in damp squibs, but they're also part of the Celtic Way group. So, and interesting, the Celtic Way hasn't signed up to the letter. So them and another website, let's just call it Celtic Fake News, they've not signed up to it either. So the protests are going pretty well. I heard Axom and Paul John Dyke says it was 75% of the away fans waited until minutes 11-12 to go into the match. So that's a pretty decent start for something that's been going for 2 weeks or less. So there was a letter, there was a meeting. It wasn't the most thought out. It wasn't the greatest insights into it. But the folk at the meeting just seemed to come up with the idea that 12 minutes, 12th man, that'll do. That gets the ball rolling rather than waiting for something at Celtic Park. So it doesn't have to happen every match, every away match. You've got Thistle on Saturday. But I think it got off to a very good start. And again, I was reading, revolutions don't just happen and get 100% backing overnight. If it's a football revolution, a political revolution, I'll pass to James for that. These things, they don't just happen overnight. It's a small group of people. They're very determined. They've got an idea, and at some stage, a bit of momentum builds. So we've got early momentum with this campaign. It was first of all, it was Save Ourselves, and that sort of withered away a little bit, and then Celts for Change came along, and a lot of the groundwork had been done, a lot of the connections and arguments had been put up, but a few things came into play. Matt McGlone was a perfect leader. The media, they couldn't avoid picking up Matt McGlone, who's up against a pretty useless Celtic quarter. Sounds very familiar to the lot led by Michael Nicholson just now. But I think the protest went pretty well. The team played reasonably. The goal loss was very annoying, but there's something inevitable about that goal coming. I think since the Scottish Cup final, when we were winning 1-0 against Aberdeen, we can never really treat 1-0 lead at home and dry. So even though we hadn't lost a domestic, or Schmeichel hadn't lost a goal all season, internationals and Champions League matches, it was a bad goal to lose. But on the left, Tanuki was fantastic. Unfortunately, we signed two left wingers, and one of them has to play on the right. So we were basically a man down on the right. But on a plastic surface, Tanuki had a fantastic game. So that's one piece of the jigsaw falling into place. But they need to get balance. They need to get somebody on the right wing. James Forrest will do it for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. But I don't know if it needs to change the formation, because if you've not got a left winger and a right winger, then you're snookered. So some thoughts will need to be done on that front. But over the piece, it's very, very rarely pretty at Kilmarnock. Last season was a horrendous game at Kilmarnock, and it came in when we were in top form. It came in the back of beating Aberdeen 6-0 and beating Leipzig, and going to Kilmarnock, it was horrendous. We were under all sorts of pressure. McGregor curled one in that Ida was going for just before half-time. Then Nicholas Coon scored it in the second half, but it was probably a better performance than that one. We've got through three difficult away games to start the season off. I think there's siege mentality from the manager. The players all know the situation that they're in, and two of the guys that were involved in the game yesterday would rather be elsewhere, but Yang and Maeda both did their best. Yang doing his best, nothing to get excited about, but Maeda is a genuine article. There's no huff, there's no petted lip, there's no little problems. He was genuinely shafted. I think he was told, stay with us, play against Kaira Almaty, play at Ibrox, and that's fine, you're good to go. And when Celtic say we'll sell you, I think you can take that to the bank, but not in this case. Celtic love selling players, but Maeda was badly let down. He'd been to Canada, or he'd been to the United States in midweek, came back to Rugby Park, popped in a fantastic header. You can't ask for much more from the guy. So on and off the park, it was a decent day yesterday, and I think on the back of Friday's events and media conference, there's a bit of siege mentality. They're all in it together, and with events at Ibrox, they realise it. Domestically, it might not be too difficult from them, and we'll maybe have to look at Hearts as opponents, but over the piece, it was a good day out at Kilmarnock.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely have to agree with you there. And Tunekti, he showed huge promise on the left side of the park, and he's not afraid to run at players anyway, that's for sure. And it's something that was badly needed by Brendan Rodgers. I think we were lacking that kind of penetration in recent games, and you could see immediately the difference he made from the get-go. So I'd say, and I mean, if that was the kind of ability he showed from his first game, that's only going to get better and better. So definitely promising, green shoots there, all right, in that regard. And I think people writing Balakwisha off after two games, that's ridiculous. He's only just in the door, and obviously he's not playing on the correct side, so give the guy a break, for Christ's sake. This is so typical of our support, knee-jerk. Yeah, guy's no good. Two games, guys. You can't judge a guy in two games, especially a game on a plastic pitch like Kilmarnock and conditions like that. Okay, Tunekti was outstanding. Balakwisha mightn't have been, but he'll come good in time. They wouldn't have been scouting him for as long as they had if they didn't feel he had something to offer. So James, give us your thoughts on the whole setup at Rugby Park, how you felt about the protest and also how you felt about the game itself.
Well, I'll do the game first. It was a typical Rugby Park performance. You know you're going to get a fight against those guys all the time. And it's a ground where Rodgers has a patchy record. It's a ground where lots of managers have a patchy record. But no, the important thing was just to get the points. We needed the points. Not just because of what happened on Saturday or what was going on around the club. We need to build some kind of momentum if we're going to put this to bed early, and I would very much like us to put it to bed early. Hearts will hang in for as long as they can, but we don't really expect Hearts to be there at the end of the season. 9 points ahead of our so-called rivals. They will get their act together at some point. They have to. They cannot get worse. They cannot possibly get worse.
We keep saying it, James.
We need to be as far ahead as possible because I think we're still short in too many positions, and I think that we're going to be tested in terms of the schedule and the personnel that we've got to handle it. So you want to put this thing away as quick as possible. So the 3 points was critical, and we just need to get a good run of games and put some points on the board and build a steady leader of the other teams. And once we've got that, we can take our foot off the gas a wee bit and rotate the squad a bit. But it's a bad position the manager's been left in, but he'll deal with it as best he can. That's why we pay him the big bucks. The protest, I thought, was tremendous. I cannot praise the guys enough for it. First of all, I say that utmost respect to everybody who was there. The guys who went in, sat in their seats, didn't give the boys that stayed out a hard time. The guys that stayed out, didn't give the boys in the seats a hard time. And that's what was great about Wednesday, because I was at the meeting on Wednesday and the general feeling there was that we're all sticking together. We'll respect each other's decisions and we'll make sure that there's no friction and no animosity amongst the supporters. Was tremendous from that point of view. And the people in the media who are criticising it, don't forget how this happened. The no confidence letter started coming in on Sunday. By Wednesday, we were having a meeting with all the different groups that signed the letter. So the meeting on Wednesday came very quickly on top of the no confidence letters, and the game on Sunday came very quickly on top of the meeting on Wednesday. And it was felt at the meeting. We went in there without any kind of plan at all for any kind of protest. That was not even on the agenda. And when it came up, the feeling of the people in the room was that we wanted to do something. We wanted to do something. And there was a debate about whether we should come in early or leave early. And the feeling was that one guy put it better than anybody else in the room. He said, you cannot lose a game in the first 10 minutes, but you can certainly lose it in the last 10. And so it was decided to go with the first 10 minutes. And it was a great decision. I thought it was an excellent decision. I thought it was a really a decision that respected the team and respected the fans. 10 minutes changed to 12 minutes in the interim, and I had no problem with that either. They framed it very nicely. If they'd had a bit longer to sell it and a bit longer to communicate the intentions to the supporters, I think it would have went without a hitch at all. As it was, it did exactly what it was supposed to do. Sent a clear message that this is something that is just getting started. This isn't going to end with a couple of protests and a couple of good performances will all die down. That's not going to happen. Everything has changed. It's what we said. We were on here weeks ago. We were on here before this even was a big deal. And we all agreed that this summer has changed everything. The very fact that we've got a board of directors that has deliberately stymied the manager and weakened the team, deliberately, has changed the whole game. And that's exactly what it is. We're not going back. We're not going back to the way things were. There is a lot of talk about what might happen at the AGM. Right now, it is just talk. But something pretty severe would need to happen to make this go away. Something pretty severe, pretty radical. I do think, based on what the manager said, that something is going on behind the scenes, going on inside the club. because Rodgers has made his feelings very clear, I'm sure. The stuff that he won't say in front of the media, I have no doubt that he said within the walls, and I have no doubt that he said to Desmond. And I would not be surprised if we had a human sacrifice at the AGM as a result of this.
It would be interesting, definitely, if we did have a sacrificial lamb, let's say, at the AGM. But what would even be more interesting is to see Rodgers and the sacrificial lamb walk out together, and then the sacrificial lamb announce what he's doing or what's happening. That's a sort of a scenario where I'd love to see the body language of what would go on. You'll be front and center at that anyway, Joe. So you'll get to see it. And you'll be asking tough questions, I'm sure. It's because this is the second time this has happened. I think he's made his position untenable by what he's done, and it's quite clear that Rodgers has made it clear. He's made it crystal clear that he's not putting up with it, and he's right. He has the moral high ground here. He has done nothing wrong in this situation. His biggest crime, according to this guy, is wanting better. Well, he didn't even say it, but I mean, we can all see it. His biggest crime is just wanting better for Celtic. And if that's a crime, then it's like I said, I wrote an article yesterday and I said, the problem is, even if this guy falls on his sword, nothing's going to change unless there's a root and branch clear out, simply because the culture within the club is based on everything that he has instructed everybody to do. So that culture won't change. In fact, if he goes, the rest of the guys will be floating around the place like plastic bags because they won't have any guidance. They won't know what to do because the puppet master is gone. So it's clearly evident based on what's happened over the last few months that he's the guy who's calling all the shots, or he's the guy who's been directing them and telling them what to do based on the calamity that has unfolded over the last few months. So if he goes, nothing's going to change because these guys don't know any other way to operate.
No.
The culture is embedded in the club for the 25 years of this century, practically. So it's you're not going to root that culture out just by having one person fall on their sword. And like you said yourself, James, in your article recently there, all the apologies in the world aren't going to make a difference. There's too much damage being done. Sorry just won't cut it.
It's not going to cut it.
It's a situation that has to be, it spoke volumes, the vote of no confidence in all three, in Peter Lawwell, in Michael Nicholson, and in Chris McKay, and Dermot Desmond. There's no confidence in Dermot Desmond either, but obviously there's a much bigger scenario at play there, as we know. It's interesting to see how it's panned out and how it's going to pan out from here on. So I'll move on to our next subject on the agenda, and that is the game at Ibrox on Saturday, which, from two perspectives, I suppose, obviously it's hilarious because, they lost a game and they still haven't won a game in the Scottish Premiership. But it also leads to the question, are Hearts serious contenders? Are they going to be serious contenders? So I'll go over to Joe. What was your impression of what went on Saturday? I mean, Hearts certainly weren't scared. They certainly weren't overawed by the situation in any way, shape, or form. While the Ibrox side might have had 66% of the possession, they did nothing with their possession. But Hearts were very industrious, and going forward, they were dangerous, and they had nearly as much shots, and obviously converted. Okay, one was a penalty, but obviously converted two of their chances and walked away winners in the game. And they definitely looked like they were a hell of a lot more clinical than the Ibrox side in terms of the way they went forward in the game, and they weren't afraid. So I think, McInnes has got he's got some good players there. He's got that new guy, Claudio Brava, looks good. The keeper that they got from Union Berlin, Schwolo, he looks pretty good. And they have that Brazilian striker, don't they, Aju? He wasn't there. He wasn't playing yesterday. And the Greek guy, can't think of his name, but he looked pretty sharp as well. So what's your impression of things that happened on Saturday, Joe?
First of all, complete joy.
Obviously.
you couldn't have wished for it to go much better. I mean, you could tell from 5-10 minutes in, I just had radio contact of it, but there was nothing happening on the park, and their supporters were getting restless, getting worse and worse. And then once Hearts had taken the lead, I mean, it was Stephen Naismith and Alistair Lamont were doing the commentary. I was like Reverend I Am Jolly and his miserable brother. But when you're taking your impression of the game from those two, so they're a hell of a mess. I think every coach in the SPFL Premiership knows exactly how to play against them. They'll change against Celtic. They'll return to chaos ball against Celtic. Just put the ball up the park, charge after it. But it seems to be that they try their Russell Martin football. They fall behind and then they go wild for a wee bit. I watched the game against St Mirren. St Mirren outplayed them the first half, and then they threw away their precious way of playing football, the Russell Martin template, and just boot the ball up and chase after it, and they got a goal from a deflection. So his tactics are horrendous. The players don't fancy it. The Raskin stuff's interesting. The supporters detest them. I've got to thank James. He mentioned early on the cultural differences. That sums it up. That guy is never going to win at Ibrox.
No way.
His football makes it even worse. So even if he's a good football manager, his lifestyle choices wouldn't be popular and always be an issue. So it's a perfect storm there. Hearts are doing okay. We've seen it from other teams before. Tony Bloom's money might make a difference to it, but I think wait to 18, 19, 20 matches. They'll benefit from not having the European games. There could be a few instances where they're playing the Saturday and we're doing catch up on the Sunday, but it'll be interesting. But I don't see Hearts being any better than Aberdeen were at this stage last season. And when it fell apart with Aberdeen, it fell apart completely. That probably won't happen with Hearts. Derek McInnes is a better manager than Jimmy Tilleen. Derek McInnes knows the terrain, so he'll keep Hearts going to a decent extent. And if they split the old firm, as the newspapers like to call it, then I'll be happy enough with that. But there are a small concern. It's not as if there's some great revolution went on. Hearts are competent, but we'll see how they last over 38 games. When I don't know about their injuries or what they've got just now, but they're doing well. But as I say, no better than Aberdeen were last season. And Aberdeen, right? Fair play. They beat us in the Scottish Cup final, but I think something like five or six league wins this year. I mean, since we beat them 6-0 in the semi-final, I mean, that's about 10 months ago.
And they had a bit of a mini revival in May, or I think it was April, mid-April, running into May and then collapsed again. And most of those wins were actually, they acquired them around that time. So there was nothing before and after that, let's say.
I think they lost all five of their matches after the split. So
yeah.
Hearts will be better than that, and that's mainly down to Derek McInnes. But the main joy, anyone said, oh, we've got to worry and look out for Hearts. No, everybody was delighted with that score on Saturday. If Hearts winning and Celtic winning was the ideal weekend, and we'll deal with Hearts later on in the season, and we can have a good chuckle at Russell. He took them wild swimming or something today in Loch Lomond. Hopefully there's some tree-hugging sessions later on in the week, some extra yoga classes at Murray Park, and extra helpings of muesli for the breakfasts.
As I said today, you know, for a group of players that were lacking in testicular fortitude, I think taking them to a place that they were going to freeze their balls off wasn't a great idea. So, James, your view on happenings at Ibrox on Saturday, what did you? I obviously, sheer joy, I'm sure, as well, like Joe, but obviously it was the result that everybody hoped for. But, I mean, as I said recently enough there, soon enough now it's going to be the first victory of the year trophy they're looking for, you know, levels and all that. So give us your view anyway.
Before I get on to it, I want to remind you guys of something. we go out of the Champions League. Within days, there are associations demanding meetings with the executive. Within days of the executive statement, we've got a full-scale meeting and a protest already in the bag. And more to come, right? Holding our club to account. There is a nutter on here tonight whose club is in free fall, sitting in 10th place in the league. And he's getting his shit and giggles coming on here to slag us.
I know, I'm watching him. I'm letting him talk
away. It's fascinating, isn't it? It's fascinating.
But what's his obsession with the Green Brigade?
There's a weird mentality there that you just cannot explain. Like, he has nothing better to do than come on and watch a Celtic podcast.
Yep. Well, he'll hear the truth here. So.
Yeah, and they wonder why the first club died. I mean, this is why right here. This is it right here. There are stories that you hear, right? And when you hear them, you have a gut instinct about whether they're true or no, right? I mean, everybody, we all know that WhatsApp rumors go around all the time. But you get a gut feeling for what ones are true and which ones aren't. And you don't even need to go and, like, find second sources for them. Sometimes you just hear something and it sounds nuts, but you're like, you know what? That actually fits. That actually worked. That actually sounds plausible. As mad as it is, it sounds plausible. And when I heard the day that they had gone swimming in Loch Lomond, I knew immediately that story was true. Because everything about it just fits perfectly. Yeah, every impression that you have of Russell Martin as a person, as a man manager, culturally, everything, it just fits perfectly. As soon as I heard that, I was like, that's exactly the kind of thing he would do. Team bonding session by going and swimming in freezing cold water and climbing mountains. And if he has to sit there on Friday before the game against Hibs and say that half of the team is injured because some of them have picked up strains and others have pneumonia, you will not be surprised. You will laugh and you will absolutely gut yourself, but you will not be surprised. It's just such a perfect Russell Martin thing today. And as soon as I heard it, I knew it was true. And as crazy as this all sounds, it can still get crazier. That club reminds you constantly that no matter how mad it gets, it can still get madder. No matter how low they think they've gone, it can still get lower. And they take my breath away, they really do. What I find fascinating right now about the way it's getting covered in the media is that they've gone from just criticising Martin to criticising the people who hired Martin. So the really screwed up thing here is that now you've got people like Keith Jackson calling for Thelwell to get sacked and calling for Patrick Stewart to get sacked. And
No. He didn't mention Paddy Stewart. Paddy Stewart
he hates Paddy Stewart anyway. He's already got a grievance against him going back to last season.
He was the
one guy that told the truth and said, this has gone up. Things are going to get worse before they get better, and it's going to be painful. And he was already freaking out about that because a CEO of his club told the truth for once. But what I find fascinating is that the same media who are telling us that it's impossible for us to shift a couple of executives who've been in the jobs too long and don't have a vision to present are telling us that they'll get ready a manager and a CEO and possibly a chairman and shake the Americans to the foundations. And they live in a complete fantasy world. A complete fantasy world. The Americans already are facing their first major difficult choice. And the choice they make will determine their quality of life far into the future. Because if they throw Martin to the Wolves before he's even 10, 20 games into the job, they're going to have the same problem with every single person that sits in that seat. For a fan base that's got no tolerance, no patience at all, they will hound every guy to the brink. And the Americans, if they give in this time, they'll just find themselves giving in again and again and again and again. And if they sacrifice an executive, they're already done. If they sacrifice a member of the board, they're already finished. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, Buffalo Alberts just said there he comes onto this team pod because where else will he get an in-depth discussion on Rangers?
Where else would you get facts? I mean, I'll give you a good example, right? Graeme Spears' podcast today had Stephen McGowan on it, and McGowan took offence to a comment that I left on it, that I left on the chat on Patreon, because I had criticised the fact that he sat there with Spears and he sat there with Ewan Murray, and they let him get away with claiming that the Ibrox club has a net spend of £20 million. And I commented that it was utterly ridiculous that they didn't even do basic research before they went on the show. So McGowan came on to defend that. He posted in his defence a BBC report, right, where he said, I got my numbers for here, right? But what's the BBC report when you read it? It's an Ibrox executive director claiming they've spent £20 million. Oh, so that must be true then, because they're claiming it. Because that must be the first time then that anybody for Ibrox has ever told a lie to the media. But as I said in my rebuttal to that, if this is your big reveal, it's not impressive. Because just look at the numbers that you guys have announced that they've signed players for. And then look at the number you say that they've brought in for players and subtract one from the other. And it doesn't come to £20 million. Do you know what I mean? It's so basic. It's so simple. Their net spend is about £4.5 million. Right? But the only reason that one of their directors thinks that he can do that is because clowns like that and his fan media don't for a second pick apart claims like that. And the mainstream media don't either. So where else are you going to get the facts other than on a Celtic podcast? Because we're the only people who tell the truth.
Exactly. Exactly. And so somebody passed a comment the other day saying that there's going to be a relegation battle between Aberdeen and the Ibrox side. And I said, well, you know, if they did, I said a man can dream, but if they did get relegated, at least everybody believed them that they got relegated that time, because they tell everybody they got relegated back in 2012. But like, if they get relegated this time, it's official. And everybody believed them when they say they got relegated. But as I said, yeah, a man can dream. So we'll move on, because we don't want to give Buffalo Alberts any more oxygen. No, and we only had a little slot for his club. We might talk about it a little bit later on in terms of where Russell Martin is headed. But
can I pick up on something?
Yeah,
James has just said that in the comments. Law wasn't in the game yesterday.
He wasn't. No.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
He was conspicuous by his absence, which
I don't know. That's interesting.
You know, brings us along nicely to the next subject. And Brendan Rodgers and the Coward. You know? So,
what's the link? What's the link? Am I missing something?
Oh no, Joe, you're too quick off the mark there. But look, we'll go back to the press conference on Friday. You wrote an article beforehand, James, saying it was probably going to be one of the hardest press conferences that he was going to face into, and there was going to be so many questions batted at him that it would be difficult for him to answer them in the best possible way. And to be fair to him, he absolutely knocked it out of the ballpark. He handled every question brilliantly. But most of all, it's his, what fascinates me about Brendan Rodgers is it's his ability to always speak with the correct language. And what he did when he spoke about the conversations that he'd had with Dermot Desmond and Michael Nicholson, and the way that he avoided mentioning Peter Lawwell, that literally just said to everybody, it spoke volumes to everybody, that Peter Lawwell was the guy who briefed the Sun. And that's the simple fact. That's what it boils down to. This guy, this is the second time he's done this now. He did it back in 2018 as well. He briefed against him. And it's clear Rodgers is not taking it. He's just not going to take it. And like we said earlier on, he had the moral high ground here. He had nothing to lose by saying what he said. And the simple fact is now he has literally put the ball right into Lawwell's ballpark, or side of the court, whatever way you want to look at it. And he now has to react. And how he reacts is going to be very interesting. But he was conspicuous by his absence at Rugby Park yesterday. And I have to admit, when I saw the guys coming in the 12th minute, the camera panned to the board members that were there, and you could see a real, real concerned look on Michael Nicholson's face as he was looking towards the away end. Now, we've talked about what kind of pressure this is going to apply to them. That was only the beginning. If there's a look like that on his face at the beginning, what's it going to be like when it ramps up? When we're at home at Hibs, you know, with Hibs after the game next weekend, and we're playing Hibs at home, can you imagine what the Green Brigade are going to put on display there? And the, you know, the atmosphere, what it's going to be like, and what kind of banners are going to be going on and going up all around the place. And you have to ask yourself, will Lawwell decide that he's dodging that particular game? So I'll move to Joe on this one. Brendan's handling of that particular subject on Friday was brilliant. And it's opened, well, I wouldn't say it's opened a can of worms. That can of worms was open already because everybody knew who went to the Sun. It's the optics of this are horrendous anyway, because the Celtic fans absolutely deplored the Sun. It was the worst possible title he could have gone to begin with. To use them as an avenue to attack the manager. That just shows the disdain and the disrespect he has for the fan base and the manager. So do you think, in light of all of this, that now his position is 100% untenable?
It's been untenable for a long time. It's more untenable. But the format of the media conference is absolutely set up for the manager to dominate. I mean, it's not... It's complete minnows that you're up against. Interestingly, I don't think the Sun had sent anyone along to it. I think it was some guy, Turnbull, was an online content manager. He was covering it. So the Sun never bothered sending anyone along. But it was a masterclass. Rodgers was in complete control. I don't know if he practiced. I doubt he did practice it. I think he's just such a natural at it. Others would need to practice it, but he just flowed through it. I mean, normally these media conferences are about 14, 15 minutes. I think that was 32 minutes on Friday, and he had complete control of it. He mentioned Nicholson and Mackay as being good guys. They might well be good guys, but they are not good at their job. Nicholson is a horrendous CEO. A CEO is employed for leadership, decision-making. The one time he's been on for a media interview was alongside Rodgers and Lowell, and he kept looking around to his side when he was asked a question. He's desperate for somebody to take it off him. And Mackay, who knows what that guy does? I think his salary is about 450,000. I doubt he'd get anything like that outside of Celtic. And he's another guy that's been there, was it 10, 15 years? Once you're at Celtic, you've got a job for life. So Rodgers was fantastic at the media conference. He got it over absolutely perfectly. It was interesting that Celtic took almost 3 hours to put it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Another interesting side to this was John McGinley of the Celtic Way. He was giving a very good, very accurate updates on it. I don't think the Celtic Way were there, but... I presume the Herald was there, so that's part of the news quest group. No,
credit to him because his updates were tremendous.
Yeah, they were.
That set the tone. Folk were like, "Oh yes, he said this, he said that, he said the next thing," and then so we had the transcript. We looked through it all; it looked really good, and then the delivery when we finally got to see the video, we got parts of the video from Sky Sports News. Then about 5:45, I think it was, that Celtic released it. But it was a masterclass. It was absolutely perfect. Lowell and the rest of them have been hiding. Lowell, Sharon Brown and Tom Allison, a couple of non-executive directors, they didn't bother going to the match yesterday either. That's Tom Allison. Tom Allison and Sharon Brown were both at Ibrox. So I don't know why they didn't go to Kilmarnock. And it's... I did a piece on it. The purpose of non-executive directors are to question things. So we've got a very high-ranking coward at the club. Hi, Peter. We've got a high-ranking coward at the club, and the non-executive directors are doing nothing about it. They should be probing and questioning that. They should be ordering an inquiry. Or some of them should be saying, well, it wasn't me, and see who doesn't come forward and say that. So... once again, the non-executive directors have failed in their duties. That's just what they do. I mean, Brian Wilson has been a non-executive director for 20 years. Tom Allison for 23 years. It's outrageous. They're not doing their jobs. They're freeloaders. And I don't know who's going to bring change. Life's going to be uncomfortable for these folk going to matches at Celtic Park and elsewhere. But... There's no spine, there's no minerals anywhere on that board. I mean, in the early 90s, Tom Grant was a bit of a rebel, Jimmy Farrell was a bit of a rebel, and they weren't fully on board with the others, but we've just got clones in just now. You wouldn't be able to... There's not anything... I mean, imagine what the board meetings are like. I mean, would anything be debated? Or is it just somebody reading through things and they all sign off and agree on it? I mean, what discussion? Do you think they were discussing which left winger should have been signed or what positions are the priorities during the transfer market? I mean, these folk, they bring nothing to the party. They take plenty. No. So we'll see what happens. But I don't see... Well, the awkward thing for them is they've got the annual accounts to publish at some stage this month. So there will be a small quote from Nicholson, there'll be a small quote from Lil in it, and they tried to bury a statement at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night 2 weeks ago. That failed miserably. There's no way they can hide. They will try their best. They'll come out with some awkward time, possibly in an hour or so before kickoff for the Dynamo Zagreb match or something along those lines. But the accounts are going to come out and it's going to show that turnover's around about 150 million. Profits, money in the bank is sitting at 80, 90, 100 million. And the team is markedly weaker thanks to Michael Nicholson over the two transfer windows. So all they can do is hide and just try and brace it out. But I think since the open letter was first published, it's getting harder and harder for them to hide. And the more they hide, the greater momentum they're bringing to... we need to give it a name, the movement, the resistance, whatever it is. But the more they hide from it, then the better it gets for them. So it's interesting times, but I don't expect any comment from them other than whatever comes with the accounts. And they'll just try and lie low and brass neck it out, hope it all goes away. And the pressure and momentum just building up against them.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe they should have gone to Loch Lomond today with Russell Martin, you know, to toughen themselves up a bit. But yeah, it's funny because I did a fairly extensive article on it yesterday in my Sunday article, and a commenter came back to me and said, "But who out there could replace these guys?" And my response to that was, "Are you telling me seriously that you don't think that there's anybody capable in the UK of doing better than these guys? Are you actually serious? You know what I mean?" So I think, like, for no, look, let's call it as it is now. The happy clappers are somewhat converted now at this stage. I think they just had to face reality. But some of them are still coming out of the woodworks and asking, like, who could we find possibly better than these guys? It's delusional behavior, like, to come out with something like that. But yeah, I mean, look, 100% Joe, agree with everything you're saying there. And it's not something we can't really debate this or have any opposite opinions on it, because it was a masterclass by Brendan on Friday. So James, give us your view on it. Obviously, I'm sure you thought it was amazing as well. Yeah.
It's one of the best Brendan Rodgers performances I have ever seen. And that is saying something, considering how good the guy is. Way back when he took our Celtic the first time, and I was like looking at his background, not just as a manager but personally, I found out that he's interested in neurolinguistics. It's quite a complicated field. It's studied by a lot of important people and a lot of important positions. There is a weird version of it in among the pickup artists, right? These are the guys who allegedly teach other guys how to pick up women, right? Their godfather is a guy called Ross Jeffries. And there's a book, I can't remember the name of it, but the guy who wrote it, Neil Strauss, was a writer for Rolling Stone. And he went to a Ross Jeffries seminar. And he said, you had all the sad sacks in the front who were there to learn from the master, right? And they'd all paid their $250, whatever it was. And at the back of the room, you had all, like, the law enforcement people and the, like, intel professionals who were all there, like, taking notes on the bits that they found interesting. So it's quite kind of, it's quite a broad field. But it's basically about how you get people to do what you want them to do by the way you speak and the language that you use. So when you're dealing with somebody who can do that and do it as well as Rodgers, the idea that I mean, think about this for a second, right? There are two elements to this that blow my mind, right? The first is that the person who did that is still at Celtic Park, working at Celtic Park right now.
Yeah.
Because this isn't even an open secret who this person is. There's no secret about this. When Rodgers did his wink and his snigger to the media at the end of the conference, and it's there on the tape, you can tell it's like, we all know who we're talking about here. Right?
Yep.
And so it's not even an open secret. It's no secret of any description who Rodgers blames for this. And what I find fascinating about it is the two separate strands of this. First, that person is still in a job at Celtic Park and hasn't already been removed. Because if Rodgers' guy is Desmond, and Desmond really is his best buddy and is protecting him, and Desmond is this superb leader and he's got all this influence on the Celtic board, he should have had that guy's bags packed the following day. Right? I had an argument with a guy the day who was telling me, nobody's proved that the story is even true. Okay, that may be the case. Nobody's proved that the story is even true. But a story as potentially destructive as that should have been denied on the first day if it wasn't true. Utterly repudiated with a statement for the manager, the chairman, and the CEO, all calling the story a fabrication. And the newspaper that printed it should have been banned for Celtic Park forever, never to set foot in the building again. And none of that has happened. None of it has happened. So that means that tells you straight away that the person who'd done that works in a senior executive position at Celtic Park. It also tells you that that person is sufficiently high up in the senior executive at Celtic Park that nobody felt comfortable even suggesting that we deny that story for the good of the whole club. So that person has an enormous amount of power and influence inside the boardroom. Or that story would have been denied. And that's the first amazing aspect here. The second amazing aspect here is that person ever thought they could get away with it in the first place. Because, as I said, you've got Rodgers, who is not just experienced at this stuff, but actually has trained himself to do this exceptionally well. And he's the sole person at the club who communicates face-to-face with the media. So straight away, you're putting an expert in that position, a guy who's superbly skilled, is the only person at the club who can give his side of the story face to face and have people believe it. So this is the guy you go after, of course, with an anonymous smear, because that's really clever. The anonymous smear itself is so ridiculous that no one believed any of it. Rodgers has already said repeatedly that he will not leave unless he's fired. Will not leave. He gave 150% commitment the week before. So how anybody ever expected any sane person to believe that Rodgers was working his ticket and trying to engineer his exit? I don't know how anyone ever expected that to go over and if anybody believe it. Secondly, Rodgers is the one who's being divisive because Rodgers is communicating to the fans what the fans are asking. Where are the signings? Why have they not been made? And Rodgers is the only person who's answering that question. So the idea that that somehow is divisive is equally ridiculous. And third, the idea that Rodgers is the only person in the history of Celtic managers who's ever complained is equally mind-bogglingly stupid allegation to make when everyone knows it's false. So we're not talking about one of the quiz kids here. We're not talking about a genius who did this. We're talking about someone of exceptional stupidity as well as ego and arrogance, right? And even if this was an incredibly disruptive act, an incredibly disruptive and grounds for immediate removal, the stupidity itself is grounds for immediate removal because you really don't want somebody in a senior executive position who is that fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like the person that put together the statement the following day, that was some 48 hours of work for whoever was involved in that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate of shooting yourself in the foot, really. Because as you put it, James, I mean, putting yourself in that position, knowing that Brendan Rodgers was the man who could come out and answer questions on something like that. In any other business, that's career suicide, you know, except Celtic, you know. That's why, you know, it's baffling that these guys still get away with it. In any other job, in any other position like that, that would be career suicide. Look, it may transpire that it is in the long term, you know, or even in the short term, depending on how things go. But it's like I said in an article I wrote during the week last week, I said, these guys never fail to take another step down on the rung of the ladder. You know, just when you think they're going to fuck up royally, they manage to fuck up even more royally. And and we're at a point in time where it's no longer a surprise. Nothing that they do that is so idiotic and stupid surprises you anymore. You know, because it's just they seem to have a penchant for absolute idiocy. And it just seems to be getting it seems to be getting worse and worse. And like I said, you just, it doesn't surprise you anymore when you see it happening. And last weekend was the epitome of that. It was the absolute epitome of that. The briefing in the Sun, followed by that just absolute pile of garbage of a statement. I mean, how did that individual think that either of those things were going to achieve anything other than to drive people around the twist? You know what I mean? It just, and it shows again the disdain and the contempt that there is there for the fan base and the manager, obviously, clearly. But what's happened is the relationship between the manager and the fan base has just become more and more galvanized. And that's all that succeeded in doing. It succeeded in 400 fan groups coming together and saying they're not putting up with this shit anymore. The manager, in brilliant language, because that's what he's capable of doing, is saying in a roundabout way, I'm not putting up with this shit anymore. So now let's see what you're going to do. You know? And that's what makes this so interesting and so captivating, really.
I forgot the fact that he did it in the Sun as well. I mean...
Yeah. The worst title possible.
The most amount of people. It's a textbook blueprint for how to lose friends and alienate people. It's incredible that somebody thought this was a good idea. It's mind-boggling level of stupidity. And you know what my favorite part of it is? We've been talking for a few months, it seems now, about how these guys had the power over Rodgers, that they were weaponizing Rodgers' promise to the fans against him. Right, and that they therefore held all the cards when it came to the summer, the transfer window, the negotiations, and even Rodgers' future. And single-handedly, that person has gave Rodgers all the power in this relationship now.
Yeah,
Rodgers
absolutely
is walking all over them now. Rodgers can go to Desmond now and say, I will sign a new deal if that person is not here. But only if that person is not here. If we recalibrate the way we work and you get rid of him, I'll stay. And Rodgers is suddenly the guy holding all the cards. And it's an incredibly self-destructive act from the individual responsible. Incredibly self-destructive. There's no way it ends well. I don't know how he ever could have imagined it would.
It's
ridiculous.
That's what happens
on every level.
That's what happens when you're an egotist and you think you're untouchable. And that's the status that this guy feels he has within the club. He thinks he's untouchable. But there's just, it's like, I've said it on this podcast before, it's like the pigs in Animal Farm. They thought they were untouchable, and in the end, they were driven out. You know, so it's the same thing.
It's
Celtic Park.
I've been surprised.
Part of it is back to the Neds. They don't ask any questions. They don't probe. Everything's, that's wonderful. How fantastic. Oh, look, there's the Adidas deal. Great. One final thing on the Sun. The Sun is a publication that pays money for the thoughts of Chris Boyd.
Enough said, Joe.
This is true.
Yep, that is. So we could stay on the Lawwell point all night, but look, I think we're probably going to be talking about this for quite some time to come because it's going to evolve over the next few weeks. So I personally can't wait to see the game at Celtic Park against Hibs and what comes of that. It'll be interesting to see if Lawwell is there. And because if he isn't, it really just speaks volumes as to what kind of coward he is that he won't show up because he's afraid to actually face the Celtic fan base. You know, so we'll see. We'll see in 2 weeks' time what happens. So we'll move on to our next point, and it's back to the basket case across the city. Just want to get your opinion, guys. How long do we think Russell Martin has left? Because he is a dead man walking. There's no two ways about that. He's the epitome of a zombie now. And how do we see? Like, there is no recovery for him at this stage. There can't be a recovery for him at this stage. They're 9 points adrift of us. With him in situ, chances are that they're going to drop more points. And they're going to fall further behind us in Hearts. Their league season's over, effectively. Because the fact is, as long as they keep him there, he's going to drop more points. I can't see him. Like, I think winning a game is going to become a struggle for him. At what point, Joe, do you think that the new board at Ibrox will make a decision and say, okay, enough is enough, we have to call this? And who the hell are they going to bring in to replace him? Because, like, who is going to want to touch that poison chalice?
Neil McCann would love it. But
of course he would.
I've had first shout at the question so far. I'll let James get first shout at this one.
Fair enough.
There were Roman emperors with less enemies than this guy.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem that he is going to have. He has got no friends at all, anywhere. And in fact, there are people in the media like Jackson who, on behalf of his pal Ferguson and on behalf of McCann and Dodds and their previous management team, were going to be out to get whoever got that job ahead of them. And I think that when Ferguson and Jackson and people like that saw that appointment, they were like, well, what does he have that you don't, Barry? What does he have that you don't, Barry? He's any more qualified than you. You should have got it if they're going to get him. And I think that's been the prevailing attitude of a lot of them. I've never seen a manager under so much pressure right so early. And it's not, and I mean, see if this was a result of the weekend's results and them being 10th and being knocked out of Europe and being knocked out of Champions League with that epochal scudding that they got, right? That would be one thing. If this had came about because of a handful of results, recent results, you know, you would be like, okay, fair enough. But this started the day of the first league game. The day of the Motherwell draw, this was already underway. Martin should get sacked. Martin shouldn't be at this club 1 minute longer. And the drumbeat was already established very, very early. The earliest I've ever seen with any manager.
You have time in the friendly against Bruges, James.
Yeah, there's been an agenda against this guy for the minute he took the job. Like, the very second he was in that seat, people have been sharpening the knives. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. Absolutely incredible. Then the vitriol and the hatred for this guy so early. And a lot of it was a result of the media being full of Barry Ferguson's buddies. And then Ferguson himself and McCann and Dodds all walked straight back into their media jobs like it was nothing. Like they'd only been on sabbatical. And these guys were to get him for the first day. And he's never had a minute's peace and he's never had time to get his feet under the table. There's been somebody undermining him constantly. And it may be one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And if the Americans have any sense at all, they will keep him for at least a year. They will keep him for a full season, if they've got any sense. Because if they throw the guy to the Wolves now, with all this going on, then they're setting the next guy up for the same, and the guy after that for the same, and the guy after that for the same. When Van Bronckhorst can get sacked, a guy who won a Scottish Cup and got them a European final, when he can get sacked because the second biggest team in the country cannot beat the biggest team in the country, and that was the sole reason for it, then that is a dysfunctional club. And if the new board and the new owners are going to listen to the crazy people, then they're going to think that it's going to get even more dysfunctional. It's mad. He should get a year. He will not get a year. They cannot possibly give him a year. But he should get one. He should get it. Oh. I wrote a piece about him, I think maybe 4 weeks ago, and it seems like a lot longer than that, over a long month. Where I said he had started reminding me of Ronald Spears from Band of Brothers. He was the crazy one that they thought had shot prisoners of war and had executed two Asian guys and stuff like that. But where I'm reminded of Spears is that in the second episode, the young kid who got lost for his patrol, he finds the kid in a foxhole and he tells him what the secret to surviving combat is. He said, get into your head that you're already dead. When you look at the world through the lens of being already dead, you can function as a soldier. And I think that's where Russell Martin is. I think he knows his fate is inevitable. The lime pit's already dug. He knows this. And that's gave him the freedom to do it his own way. He's no scared because he knows what's coming and he knows what's going to happen to him. And he's just approaching it without any fear at all. And that's why going swimming and Loch Lomond and all that makes such perfect sense. It's a guy operating without any restraints or any constraints at all because he knows he's screwed. He knows it's already over. And he doesn't care any longer. It's just, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down doing it my way. I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm going to do it the way I've always wanted to do it. And good luck to him. I actually do feel a bit of admiration for the guy and for what he has to put up with. And he sat there. He sat there at a press conference at the weekend. And when their fan media guys were baying for his blood, and one of them said, you didn't realise that nobody wants you here? He said, some of you didn't want me here in the first place. So what? So it's like, I admire him. He's a guy who looks like he doesn't give a shit. And there's something admirable about that. He's fronting up and he's taking it on. Of course, he can't possibly last much longer. He should. If the Americans have any sense of any balls, they'll give him a full season. But he has got no friends at all. He's not going to find any allies in the media because they all want rid of him. He's not going to find any allies in the Ibrox fan base. They've made their minds up, and they made it up weeks, maybe even months ago. It's a bad situation. I've never seen any manager in a situation like it. And no wonder he's floundering. It's pretty appalling. And you're right. It does beg the question, who the hell will want that job next? Because if they sack him this early, then the lifespan of an Ibrox manager is no longer measured in a year. It's measured in months.
10 games.
Maybe even a week. I mean, who knows? It's metal.
Realistic time frame, though, James. How long do you think he is going to last?
If he loses the Hibs, it's over. If they go to the League Cup at the weekend, it's done. There's no way of survival.
Yeah. Okay, Joe, your opinion on this one. What have you got?
It's difficult to follow that up, but it's game by game. It'd be interesting. I don't know what the bookies odds will be, but I would imagine Hibs must be the favourites going into that game. Hibs aren't doing so great themselves. I mean, they've Hibs'd it in the Europa Conference. They were put 3-1 down to 3-1 down to Dundee United at home at the weekend, came back to 3-3. So they're not great, but I think most managers will be rubbing their hands. It's a great chance for every coach in Scotland to go and prove themselves. Stephen Robinson's done it against repeated Ibrox managers, Clement, Ferguson and Russell Martin. He's avoided defeat against all of them. Hibs won at Ibrox last season, 2-0. Then there was that highly controversial draw in the last game of the season. Hibs should fancy it. Every team going to Ibrox will fancy it. And Russell Martin is a very strange character. I mean, don't forget, he got through 7 rounds of interviews to get that job. So,
that's remarkable, Yankovic.
It is.
Imagine having to listen to him for 7 rounds of interviews. I presume there's different people involved, need to speak to the Americans and speak to this one, speak to that one. But I listened to him for 7 rounds talking about how wonderful he is and his wishy-washy ideas and his theories, how he's mini-Pep and the rest of the world just doesn't understand them. But he's going to be gone pretty quick, and it's got to be a staunch manager. They've managed to dupe a few, like Phil Clement and Van Bronckhorst, into thinking this might be quite a modern European club and a big opportunity. But I think anyone in the continent, unless it's somebody as bonkers as Pedro Caixinha, is just going to say, absolutely no way, I just don't need it. Even though there's a guarantee that you'll get paid off within a year, it's not worth it on a personal level. So it's got to be Neil Warnock, possibly, David Martindale. But I think Neil McCann's probably the favourite. I don't suspect Barry Ferguson will go back in. He knows he's got a bit of credit, Barry Ferguson. They won against Celtic, they won against Fenerbahce. They can dine off that for a long time. But McCann is a real snake. When you saw him on Sports Scene, he's never far away from their games. And all he's doing is telling people, how clever am I? I know all these football tactics.
Wouldn't it be funny if Neil McCann went in and Barry Ferguson was his assistant? You could see it happening.
I'm assuming, Joe, that you don't think there is any prospect of them prizing Derek McInnes out of Tynecastle.
Not a hope.
No.
He's onto too much of a good thing there.
No,
if he'd approached him at the end of last season, he might have taken it. But at the end of last season, he was a bit tainted because things hadn't gone so well at Kilmarnock last season. But Derek McInnes is a very good Scottish manager. Give him reasonable resources and he'll make the best of it. He's done it at Kilmarnock, he's done it at Aberdeen. He should do it at Hearts. But their toxic support, that is the biggest issue there. McInnes shat himself, right? That's a word. That's
concomitantly, yeah.
That's what they accused him of. He was fear of it. He should never have him. You don't get a second chance.
He's got more sense to take it on, isn't he?
He turned down Sunderland not long after it as well, and that was another sensible move. Sunderland's a bonkers club. So I don't think McInnes would go anywhere near it. With somebody desperate like Neil McCann, he could go in and he could get 6 months or a year at it, and it'll increase his payments for his future media career. But I would be amazed if any competent continental manager looked at it and says, yes, this is a good project. They've got a 50,000-seater stadium. They've got 45,000 season ticket holders. It's a two-horse race. I'll go in and make a success of it, because Van Bronckhorst and Clement both failed. They had reasonable pedigrees coming from the continent, so it's got to be somebody home-based. I don't think Gerrard will go back to it. It's very, very difficult to see somebody on someone as desperate as Neil McCann or someone of that ilk to come in, and they're not going to last long either. At some point, somebody's going to have to sit down with their supporters and say, lads, we're in a hell of a mess. Please, please, please give us a little bit of time. It might be 2 years, it might be 3 years before we can do something, but the cycle that they're on is fantastic. I mean, we've all seen the graphic about the new man. There's not even a new manager bounce this year. Beale went on a fantastic run. I think Beale's got something like a 72% win rate. I mean, he came in 9 points behind Celtic, and they were 9 points behind Celtic when they went there. I think it was the end of March. I think it might have been into April, and Celtic won the game 3-2. Celtic were a bit shaky, but Souter and McGregor combined to give Jota a memorable goal. So guys like Beale can come in and do it. They'll never take Beale again. So it's got to be someone like McCann or David Martindale or Warnock coming up for a laugh, but it's not going to be anyone credible. And until somebody sits down and calms their supporters, see all this nonsense about it's a club that demands winning and the jersey's too heavy and all this guff. They really need to work. Well, hopefully they don't. Hopefully they keep being as obnoxious, toxic and all the rest of it as they've been for the last 12, 13 years. There's no easy way out of it, and we can sit back and enjoy it. The takeover that we were slagged off for, the fakeover, what a difference it's made.
Yeah, big time. But any manager, any prospective manager outside of the guys that you've mentioned, like Martindale or McCann or somebody like that along those lines, any manager looks at that job now and just asks, the first question he's got to ask himself is, do I want to commit career suicide? Because literally every manager that goes there commits career suicide. There's a track record of career suicide for managers there. You know, so like that's the first thing that you're going to have to ask yourself as a manager. Is that what you want? Do you want to risk destroying your career as a manager? And I mean, I think because Russell Martin doesn't give a shit, he's already committed career suicide. Because I mean, who's if things continue to go the way they are for him there now, who's going to actually look at him and say like he's a credible manager because of what's happened at Ibrox, you know? So okay, guys, we're coming towards the end. I just want to touch on one subject, which is kind of a little bit off off our subjects, as we'd say. I just want to highlight a win for our local team last Friday night. And the only reason I'm highlighting that is because the manager is a former Celtic man, Colin Healy, and he pulled off probably one of the biggest shocks in Irish the FAI Cup history. A three-year-old club, Kerry FC, knocked out Premier Division Sligo Rovers, Johnny Kenny's former club, from the FAI Cup in the quarterfinal. And these guys weren't given a snowball's chance in hell. They were 3-0 down with 60 minutes gone in the game, dead and buried, to a hat-trick from a guy called Owen Edding, who played a fantastic game. And the comeback was off the scale. They brought it back to 3-1 in the 66th minute, then got a penalty in the 77th, and then equalised in the 92nd. A young kid called Kian Brosnan, who's a nephew of one of our CSC members, scored a beautiful goal to level it, and then it went into extra time. And just the romance of the cup went all the way in extra time to the last minute of extra time. And Daniel Akute, a little player from Killarney, scored a beaut of a goal, and he was involved in all the goals for Kerry FC. So it was just, you know, it was one of those games that restores your faith in football as the beautiful game, you know. And I just want to give a shout out to Colin Healy, because it's an amazing achievement by him. And hopefully, I hope we can get him on the show, because he can tell us a few stories about his Celtic days. But what he achieved on Friday night was fantastic for such a small local club. The ground only holds 1,300, and it was packed out on Friday night, and the atmosphere there was crazy. So, yeah, just wanted to mention that before we give our thoughts on the game at the weekend and predictions for the Partick Thistle game. So I'll go with you first, James. What do you think? How do you think we're going to get on for the League Cup tie against Partick Thistle at Firhill?
Well, first, mate, since you mentioned you took your own little sidebar there, I need to say thanks to George Boynton for getting us on the air last week.
Definitely, well, out of the way, yeah.
He learned fast, he learned on the job, and he put it together in one hell of a hurry and did a fab job. So thanks for that, mate. Really, we all really appreciate the effort. And yeah, it was important to get us on the air last week and keep the momentum up. So we all appreciated that. Right, Thistle. It should be straightforward and should be comfortable. I mean, let's face it, it should be. But should be is where you get into trouble these days. Because we all thought that should be was the situation against Kyra, and it turned out not to be. We're still only creating enough chances. We're still not scoring enough goals yet. But I saw some positive signs yesterday. And hopefully we've got all that a wee bit and we've turned the corner. And now we can start putting some momentum together. It looks like a straightforward enough game. But we'll need to be on our guard, and we'll need to be a lot less complacent than we might have been in Kazakhstan. At least Maryhill's not that far up the road. But it should be a relatively straightforward passage out of the next round, and hopefully a game against Hibs.
Okay. Joe, what's your feeling on the game against Thistle?
Go along similar lines. It should be fairly straightforward. We're up against a combination of Radio Clyde Super Scoreboard panellists, Alec Ray and Mark Wilson. So hopefully get Gordon Dalziel along and Hugh Keevans as well involved somewhere. It should be fairly straightforward. It should be a chance to build a little bit of confidence and maybe bring in someone like Dane Murray and one or two others. But there was three debuts in the team on Sunday at Kilmarnock. So there's players that need games and get playing time. So it's effectively a warm-up for Red Star Belgrade. So you want it to be as straightforward as possible. I have got no hopes whatsoever for the Europa League. We do not have anywhere near the squad to cope with it. So keeping things going domestically has got to be the best we can hope for. And on Colin Healy, if any guy in football and life deserves a few breaks, it's him. So he was the unluckiest footballer going at Celtic. He was the unluckiest guy in the world not to get to World Cup finals and various other things that have happened to him. So if it's Kerry that he's found his home in and can build up his enjoyment of football and get his... He was a manager at Cork City a year or two ago. So hopefully can get things going again. He's enjoying his life. He's enjoying his football. And hopefully there's bigger things ahead for him in the future. But I'll go with James. A Celtic Hibs League Cup semi-final. Yes, please.
Fair enough. Thanks for the comments there on Colin Healy as well, Joe. He's actually got Shamrock Rovers up in the next one, which is Dermot Desmond has a controlling interest in that club as well. So he's playing pretty good. Yeah, they've got to travel to play them in Dublin. So that's going to be a tough one. But hopefully the romance of the cup will continue for them. But yeah, I would say pretty much the same. I reckon we'll have a fairly comfortable victory at Firhill on Sunday next. Is it Sunday or Saturday? It's on
Sunday.
Yeah, and like you, I believe that Hibs will do a job on the Ibrox side, and we'll end up with a semi final with Hibs and Celtic. And as a lot of our commenters had said on the Hibs-Ibrox game, hopefully Hibs will show up in the hoops in that game just to drive them all mad. That'll be brilliant. Yeah, I have to say, I really liked their hooped kit on Saturday in the game against Dundee United. It was a good tribute to the original jersey that they had when they started out 150 years ago. But so yeah, guys, I guess this wraps up this week's show. Another great show as usual. Just a little bit of housekeeping as usual. We had nearly 250 on the live show tonight, which was a good strong attendance on the live show. And also, if people like what we're doing, can you hit the thumbs up, subscribe, and like, and keep following us, because we're growing. We're still a young podcast. We're just coming up on a year old, and your support has been phenomenal in the first year. So we'll have to have a big celebratory podcast in December, guys, when we're a year old. And but to be fair, no, the support has been amazing. And over the last few weeks, the momentum has really, really built, because people see us as the go-to podcast now to really flesh out what's going on at Celtic at the moment, because we were always talking about it in the build-up to all of this. So and people realize that we're the guys who tell it like it is and who predicted this a long, long time ago. So with that, we'll call it for tonight, guys, and I will see you this time next week. And we might have a surprise guest on next week again. We just have to finalize that, but I won't say any, won't announce any names as yet. We might tell you in our blogs in the run up to it, but we should have a guest on next week, all going well. So talk to you then, guys. Have a good week between now and then.
Cheers, guys.